You're listening to A Woman's World. I'm Purvi Shah, and I have here with me Azra Naqvi from SAYA, South Asian Youth Action. And I wanted to hear, Azra, you were just talking about the poetry slam, and it happened at the SAYA Center, right? So you actually have a physical space that youth can come to.
The SAYA Elmhurst Center is actually our original location. That's where SAYA started, and now we're in 15 different school sites. So.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How do you manage that all, to be in 15 different locations?
You know, I think that we have a great team. Mm. We really have a wonderful staff, and our senior management is so well connected and so supportive that it really makes it work.
Hmm. So what happens then at the center?
So at the center, because we are dealing with high school students, we have a cohort model program. And so we call it SAGE, which stands for Support, Action, Guidance, and Enrichment. Hmm. So we try and cover all of the bases. And the most important thing is having a well-rounded student. You know, a lot of times in the South Asian community, parents think that academics are all that matter. And that's really not true. You know, if you can play the piano, even better. You know, if you're a good writer, that's fantastic. So we try and engage them in the community. We get them active. We try to give them one-on-one college guidance. We give them SAT prep. We make that transition for them a little bit easier.
Hmm. And if I remember correctly, there was a basketball tournament at some point too, right?
Yeah, we actually do Hoops for Hope, which is our longest running event at SAYA, and it just passed in March. And the kids get together and they play and for charity, and it's a really wonderful event. And now we have a great sports program that our young men's group has spearheaded and is so excited to have. So we have multiple things. We have dance, we have basketball, we have piano, we have chess, and essay writing, a lot of different avenues that the kids can go down.
That's great, because I think that, you know, every kid is different. Every youth has different desires or talents. And it's great that you have all those options, so that nobody has to feel like, oh, you know, I don't like basketball, so I'm not going to do that. Or I don't even like to dance, but, you know, I can go play chess or something.
Yeah. And, you know, like, we're very good about gauging that. You know, if they're not interested in that, they're welcome to join something else. And so that's the beauty of the cohort model is if something doesn't work, you're welcome to join something else.
Who are your models in terms of growing up and doing this work?
I have to say that my number one model would be my grandmother. She was fantastic. Just the strongest, most independent woman I ever have known. And I've been really lucky to be surrounded by really strong women who have always built me up and guide me. And I've had the best mentors.
Tell us a little bit. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your grandmother. Where was she born?
She was actually born in Lucknow in India, actually in Sandila, like a small town outside of Lucknow. And very typical, you know, migrant story. She ended up moving to Pakistan during the partition and grew up in Karachi.
Mm.
And then after that, once she married my grandfather, she moved to Iran. And so my mom was born in Pakistan, but grew up in Tehran.
Hmm.
And soon after the revolution of 69, they fled Tehran and came to New York.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And so does your mom talk about these migration histories and what it was like to live in Iran and then have to leave?
Yeah, I think that I probably like poke a lot more than she would like. I love to hear about those kinds of things. I love to hear about our family history. And so I would always ask my grandmother and my mother the experience and what it was like. And you know, it was a very difficult time. And I think that through their stories, without even saying it, you can tell that they were empowered by their situation. Although it was a difficult situation, they always found a way to survive. You know, my grandfather died at a really young age, and my grandmother was left with 5 children to raise on her own. And sometimes I think back on her life, and when I'm reflecting, I think, I don't know how she did it. And if I could have a little bit of her in me, just a little, I'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, that is an amazing story. And it's incredible to imagine, and it really gives perspective when you have a hard day and you're like, oh, you know, what you have to manage.
Yeah, and life can't be that bad.
That's amazing.
Yeah, struggling like with the language and the cultural issues. And soon after the revolution of 69, as you know, when Khomeini came into power, it was all about, you know, putting on the hijab and being cloaked. And, you know, it was something that I think my grandfather felt uncomfortable having my grandmother go through. Mm. And so to make that decision as a family and to be a supportive husband and to make that decision for his daughters was a big deal at the time.
And do you also have a family home in Karachi?
We actually do not. Mm. I do have my uncle on my father's side who still lives there, but majority of my family has moved over to the States. So, yeah.
Yeah. So for you, it's interesting to have all these sort of generational experiences from other places and countries, but you've been in the U.S. then your whole life.
Yeah, I was actually born and raised here, but I would always go back. Every summer we would go back to Pakistan. So I was very lucky to have that. I think that I learned a lot from traveling back and seeing what work needed to be done and what we could be doing. And I think that I always had the desire to work, you know, in the public sphere and to help, really. Mm.
So how do you feel with your work at Saya? How has it changed you?
It has given me a sense of purpose, really. I don't think that when I was in school, I knew what I wanted to do exactly. And that's like most kids these days graduating. And
there's so many options. Yeah, and you just feel, yeah.
It was daunting. And there was a lot that was expected from me. You know, like I had to go to professional school. I had to, you know, fulfill certain goals by certain age so that I could still get married. And all those options are still on the table. You know, but I was really lucky because although my society, my community pushed that, my parents never did. So I got to have a very different kind of experience, which was, in the long run, I look back now and I think that being able to be a part of Saya and what I do every day really has transformed me and given me a sense of purpose to wake up and love what I do.
That's amazing and such a gift, right? Yeah. To feel like you can...
Yeah, because I talk to a lot of my peers and a lot of people in my generation are not engaged. They almost don't even know that they should be. You know, they don't know how to be or... you know, what to do to get there.
And when you say engaged, I think you're not implying a marriage engagement.
No. But
what are you engaged with? What do you mean by that?
Engaged in community work, in giving back in some way, you know? And I always say this, ever since I joined Saya, I thought that, you know, I'd be giving a lot and that I would, you know, like somehow I would be transforming these youth lives. But sometimes I go home and I feel like I'm taking a lot more away from it. And I kind of feel guilty because it does. It feels great to be able to do something like the work we do at Saya.
I think that's really profound in terms of the work of nonprofit organizations in our community. And, you know, we've definitely in the last 20 years gone from so few to having a number of organizations, which is amazing. But I think you're really speaking to the importance of the work that we do, both for ourselves, but also for the community in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you hear youth talking, seeing you all as role models and wanting them to do community work themselves later?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if a lot of them make the connection because sometimes they think we're just there to hang out with them, you know? They think we're like best friends, and, which we are. We love that. That's what we want. We want to connect with them on that level. But at the same time, I think they ask a lot of questions of how we got there, what we did, you know, and they do see us as role models. And we try and guide them in that direction.
Did you imagine that you would be a role model?
I'm, you know, I'm an older sister and so I and a cousin of many. So I've always grown up telling younger ones what to do.
And so I noticed how when you talk about Saya's work, it's encouraging youth. And when you talk about your family,
yeah,
it's
I'm telling them what to do. I switch on and off really quickly.
I guess some roles die hard of the older sibling. But so in your own family, then, what does your family think about this work?
I think that when I first joined Saya, they didn't really understand why. Although, you know, my parents, you know, they come from an educated background. And so they always thought that success was money, you know. To be successful was to be financially secure. And that's something that you should have before you, you know, settle down and before you move on to the next phase in life, because that's the most important thing. And although it's true in more ways than one, I agree. I just think that waking up and doing something that you don't love and that you don't feel so passionate about is really difficult to do for a long period of time. So they were confused. They didn't know why. And, you know, once I started talking about all the great things we do and coming home and telling stories, I think they got more involved. And now they're just, they're excited. They're always wanting to know what's happening next at SIA. When's the next event? What are you doing? You know, how are the kids? So it's really great.
That's amazing. And I think, you know, part of that is just the sense that everybody's journey is different. And, you know, I think what you said about doing the same work over and over and not even liking it is so life deadening. You know, you just kind of do it because you're expected to do it. And
sure,
this is a whole different path in terms of thinking about your life.
Yeah. And, you know, I graduated at such a difficult time that most of the people I graduated with were taking whatever they could at the time, you know, whatever jobs were coming their way, they were stepping in and, you know, really going full force because it was hard. It was a really difficult time. And I think that my parents understood that. So now my dad, you know, updates his Facebook statuses about me and what I'm doing, which is very embarrassing, but really reassuring. So it's great.
First of all, I love that your father's on Facebook. Yeah.
I'm glad you do, because I certainly do not.
And second, it's great that it's become this other public vehicle to talk about your work.
Absolutely. Now I'm campaigning for different things at SIA and promoting all the things I do. So it's really great. And a lot of my younger girl cousins get engaged through what I do. I recently went to the SOLF conference, the South Asian Women's Leadership Forum, and I was immediately impressed by it all. The panelists were amazing. It was such an empowering event. And I came back and that's all I could talk about. It was all I wanted to talk to my younger cousins about. And I said, wait till you're old enough to do these things. It's so great. There's so many great opportunities out there and such strong women leaders, you know, that you can surround yourself with.
That's amazing. And so, you know, you're serving as this sort of mentor conduit for folks in your family and in the community. And how does it make you think differently about maybe your own next steps or dreams or what you want to do eventually?
So for me, I think the big question now is, you know, in my personal life, I've been married for 3 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you to a very supportive husband. But it's this question, I guess, that comes up a lot and has been coming up very often now about, can you have it all?
Yeah.
Right. And so I, you know, I'm thinking about family planning and my career and when's the right time to take that break? When's the right time to step away and say that it's going to be okay when I step back into, you know, the workforce?
That's incredible, Ezra. I mean, I think so. There's recently been so many conversations too about, you know, women leaning into work, right? Or being able to juggle it all. And it's sort of, you know, you can't do that. Some of the recent articles have been about the importance of having a supportive partner or network or having other people, you know, which is sort of how guys have been able to do it all along, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No one really asks them, you know, like, can you have it all? Like, I don't know. I've never asked that to any of my, you know, male family members. I've never seen that come up. But for me, I think I can have it all. It's just a matter of when, right? I think I could have it all, but maybe not at the same time. I want to take time to enjoy it while I'm there, you know?
That definitely makes sense. And just appreciate where you are in life.
Sure.
You know, and what that means.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Ezra, for sharing all this information about SIA and just what motivates you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's been great to have you here. So we're going to close out actually with one more poem from the SIA Youth Slam. This is a poem called This Is Our World. Thank you all for joining us.
This world. In this world, there are only two things, right and wrong. But why is it that good is right and evil is wrong? Why should we decide which is which when we will never know? If this world was only made out of black and white, then and only then could we tell. But as of now, good and evil is masked within human faces. In this world, we are nothing but paint on the canvas. We continue to spread and shift this world into what we desire, but why? This world holds secrets that we may never know. This world is our world.
You just heard Fariha sharing her poem, This Is Our World. Thank you all for tuning in, and I look forward to connecting with each of you again on A Woman's World.